Welcome to Let's Get Our Shit Together, a queer women of color debrief on the latest in queer lady and POC representation in television and film. I'm Aphrodite.
And I'm Amira.
And I'm real excited for this week's podcast episode. We're debriefing the second episode of season three, Plus It Up, of The Bold Type. This episode just gave me a lot of queer feels, and I'm kind of excited to like break that down with you because there's like what's happened on the screen, but then like my reactions to the storyline too. I honestly was worried that they were gonna not give Kat a legit queer storyline because it's the second episode and she already got the first episode of the season. You know, like she got to have the heart of the season premiere. Are they gonna give her more like goodies in episode two? And I wasn't confident that she would get that. So I kind of went into it like, meh. You know, like maybe it's going to be centered around all these cis white dudes who are like taking over the show for whatever goddamn reason. Yeah. There are just so many of them. So many cis white dudes, honestly. And if you'll permit me to do a mini rant, but going into this episode, I had very low expectations because I was debriefing the season premiere with my bestie. And we were both talking about, you know, they bring in a new cis white dude. And then both of the white girls have chosen cis white dudes over the Asian guy, Ben, and over Alex, the black guy. I'm like, what is going on, you know, like with all these cis white dudes taking over this supposedly feminist show? Like, I knew that this was a show that was kind of like white women heavy. Thinking that over, why is it like white dude heavy? So I was worried, and then I went into it, and even though I'm still, well, about Sutton and Jane, blah, whatever, this this episode, because it centered around Kat's relationship to the queer community, was really refreshing for me.
Yeah, and I think that this is yet another episode where it's like, they've got queer people in the writing room, and it shows, you know? I mean, the issues that they were talking about and the experiences, I mean, it's just very, very relatable, just even in like the minute details, you know?
Yes, yes.
So let's jump into it. I have to say, this first, well, I don't know if it was the first scene, but one of the first scenes when Jane was talking about her discomfort, talking about like the egg stuff with Pinstripe, which is a whole thing I do not want to get into. Kat brings up the example of pooping in front of each other, and Jane counters with, well, did you poop in front of Adina? And Kat's like, Kat admits that she apparently went to a different location, like a store.
Dwayne Reed.
On like the corner of her street. Yeah. Is that, what is that?
That's a CVS in New York.
Oh,
she would go to the CVS. First of all, do CVSs, do Dwayne Reed's even have public restrooms? I mean, I guess like this, like yet another issue between Adina and Kat that they couldn't.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, I'm not like, I don't openly poop in front of my girlfriend, but like, I don't leave the house, you know? Like,
oh, yeah, no. Just close the door.
I can poop when she's there. Yeah, you just close the door. I mean, we pee in front of each other. That's like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's pretty basic openness.
Yeah, but that was cute. That was cute.
Yeah, I just like that little insight into the Kadena relationship. I was like, wow, that is so sad. And also, thank you for informing me about New York drugstores.
Yes, Dwayne Reed is the drugstore chain in New York City.
Got it. Yeah. Yeah. That's like when I moved out to California and I had to learn what Safeway was and how it was far inferior to Meijer.
Oh, wow. I had to learn what Meijer was when I moved to the Midwest because I only knew what a Safeway was.
And how it was far superior to Safeway. Yeah, I know. Yeah. So Kat at work finds out that her hashtag Be Real has blown up. And as Patrick is scrolling the feed to show her, she sees a tweet about her favorite queer bar, the one that Adina took her to, Wild Susan.
Which is a great name for a lesbian bar.
Great name. Yeah. Is unfortunately closing down.
Yeah.
So this is like a really, like, this hits home, right?
Yeah, yeah.
For like our people.
It definitely does. And it also like reminded me of like the entire premise of Vita, where it's really about like a lesbian bar at risk of shutting down because of local gentrification. So we find out that this bar, Wild Susan, is being shut down because it owes like $42,000 worth of fines in the city. But those fines were incurred like many years ago. And they were only brought up now because they're trying to turn it into luxury condos. Oh, just as a quick side note, mm-hmm. Patrick and his adoption of Asian spirituality, I was giving massive side eye to him this week.
Like, I know. I was just like, mini meditations. Like, I'm like, all right.
Like, fuck you. First with your namaste and now with this little meditation thing in the middle of a crowded room while you're at work. Stop. Anyways.
Yeah.
So Kat, I love that she just takes her straight girl friends and and takes them to Wild Susan. And then we see her talking to someone who looks like she's on staff at Wild Susan. And she's trying to figure out, like, what's happening, what's going on. Kat says to Sutton and Jane, I love going to straight bars with you guys, but I'm still finding myself and finding my place. And having a bar like this is really great. And I'm like, oh, yes. Thank you. You are acknowledging that you are still figuring out how to be a queer woman of color. Yes. You're still figuring out mm-hmm. who you are, mm-hmm. and you need the space to do that. And I love that she's become a regular at this bar, even though we're not seeing it. Like, I'm guessing that when she and Alex were dancing in the premiere, they were also at this bar. I'm guessing that that's the bar that she frequents.
That's also what I was guessing. Well, and so she also tells them that there's only two lesbian bars in the city, mm-hmm. and they're, like, shocked. And I'm like, how many times have I had this conversation with straight people? And it went exactly like that, where I'd be like, yeah, like, there are actually no lesbian bars in San Francisco. And they're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, there are plenty of gay bars and a fair share of guy bars, but there are no explicitly lesbian bars.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, just because, you know, they think that they live in this, like, gay-friendly city. And I'm like, I have to, like, open their eyes to the truth that, you know, it's friendly to some, mm-hmm. But it's not an all-inclusive, like, LGBTQ kind of city.
Exactly. And like, the truth is New York City does only have two lesbian bars, Cubby mm-hmm. Hole and Henrietta Hudson. And that's it. And Cubby Hole is tiny. You know?
It's a cubby hole.
Yeah, that's literally what it is. Jane and Sutton are kind of surprised. Kat being Kat is like, I'm going to text my lawyer. And I'm like, yes, Kat. Right. Use your privilege. Do all that shit. She is a lawyer from the Be Real Twitter campaign, supposedly. Mm-hmm. And she's trying to figure out how to save this bar. Well, as I was watching this, I was also thinking about, so, like, right now I'm sort of based in the greater DC area, and DC currently has two lesbian bars as well. A League of Her Own, which everyone calls Aloho, and another bar called XX Plus. These two bars only really opened last summer, and DC had gone through an extended period where there were zero lesbian bars in the city. But in fact, DC was the home of the nation's very first lesbian bar. So the oldest lesbian mm-hmm. bar in the country was called Phase One, and it was located in DC, and it shut down a few years ago. It's really fortunate that we have two in the DC area right now. But the only reason why both of those bars are financially viable is because Aloho, A League of Her Own, is actually attached to a gay boy bar. It's the same building.
Oh.
And so
Is it the same owners as well?
It's the same building, but like the basement level is for lesbians, then the second floor is for the gay boys, and then the third floor is a dance floor. It's great because, like, then you have a mixed gender space, right?
Right, but still have sort of, like, your own space if you want.
You have your own space, exactly. But it's sad because, you know, gay guys drink more and they make more money. So lesbians are broke and they don't drink that much. When they do interact with the queer women spaces, they basically go and U-Haul and then they live at home with their cats and they don't go back.
Hashtag me.
So, I mean, it's very difficult for a lesbian bar to stay financially viable, especially when the neighborhoods where those bars are located are being gentrified and the cost mm-hmm, of mm-hmm. that real estate is going up. But that said, Kat is, like, on the move. She's going to save this bar. And if only every lesbian bar had a Kat who was willing to, like, pull this shit and, like, talk to people and throw fundraisers, you know?
I know. And I also like the incorporation of the city councilman because it's like, you know, in this day and age, I feel like showing the importance of getting involved in local politics is important. And so, you know, the lawyer that she contacts encourages her to talk to her local city councilman. So she goes and talks to him. His name is Councilman Reynolds. And she has a brief meeting with him. And he basically is like, yeah, there's nothing I can do. And she's like, okay, that was not helpful.
And when she and the girls have some closet time, it suddenly dawns on her that because they're doing this prom photo shoot at the magazine, that they could throw a queer prom.
I know. It's such a cute idea, too, because, I mean, there are, like, legit queer proms for, like, prom-aged kids. queer kids, which is really nice. Mm-hmm. I know we had a queer prom in my hometown of Ann Arbor, Michigan. Mm-hmm. But the idea of like a queer prom when you're older and kind of being like, you know, because a lot of queer kids didn't have like the best memories at prom.
Yeah, and we feel like. Exactly. And we find out that Oliver hated his prom. And it was really when his name was brought up, that's when Kat was like, well, what if we threw this queer prom for Wild Susan and hold it as a charity event? And what I like about this is Kat's first time throwing a queer event. So it's not just that she's like, you know, talking to the staff at the bar, talking to the city councilman, but she's also organizing. Mm-hmm. For the community, mm-hmm. too. And I think that's what we both wanted. We wanted her to be more in touch with the community. I think we wanted her to build yes. relationships, but like, this is even better. And so right. I was just like, I'm like, yes, you go, Kat. You go, you know? Baby Dykes, first time organizing for the community. I salute you.
Yeah. No, she did a great job. And I also am really happy about the storyline because I was worried they were just going to kind of keep her on standby for a while and then throw her into another whatever situation, mm-hmm. Give her a love interest. But this way it's like, we can see her like, you know, organizing with the community, stressing that she, you know, identifies with this community. Mm-hmm. She has her straight friends. She even yeah. says like, I'll still go to straight bars with you guys, but like, I need this space. And I love that like Jane and Sutton are just like very understood. Like it was not a plot point for them to like understand why she needs her own space. Some of us, I won't say all of us, have had experiences with straight people, like genuinely not understanding why we like need to go to mm-hmm. queer only spaces.
Yes.
At least some of the time.
Yes.
And it can be really frustrating. So once again, Jane and Sutton are very good friends. I really appreciate that on this show. Mm-hmm. I cannot stress it enough.
Yes.
But I'm hoping that through this, Kat will find not only, I mean, another love interest would be cool because the other two are all about their love lives on this show, but I want her to make some queer friends and mm-hmm. like show her like regularly hanging out with like I know, you know, Jane and Sutton are her number ones, but she can have like a queer number one.
Yeah. 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 So like this podcast is about shipping, obviously, but like I also ship Kat for herself. Like, I want Kat to know who she is even before she jumps into another relationship. She needs time to, like, calm down, recover from this breakup, do a lot of work on herself, I think, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. figure out who she is as, like, a Black queer woman. So I did appreciate that even though I hate Sutton and Richard, but at least Sutton brought Richard to the fucking event so he could drop a bunch of hundreds in there. I mean,
I know.
He could have written a fatter check, but whatever, you know?
Yeah. So, Kat throws this queer prom. It is amazing. I have to say, Kat's dress was like hideous, but she managed to look amazing
in it. What? I loved her dress. Are you kidding
me? I mean,
it
was like very extra. I don't know. It was a little too like, it reminded me too much of like a clown suit, like that kind of like material, that like sheen, you know? But okay, I don't know. It's an unpopular opinion. I'm sorry. I'm not saying I hate it. I think that queer spaces are the place to like put on that super extra stuff, as she called it, and like, you know, go all out and like push the boundaries. So I'm just saying that like she is gorgeous and she looked gorgeous, even if the dress was not okay. So much.
And I'm just saying that as like a flamboyant gay, I would have worn that dress.
And you would have rocked it too, for sure.
So one thing that I liked when we got the first shot of the scene at the queer prom, they were playing What I Need by Hayley Kiyoko and Kalani, which is two queer women of color singing about their flirtation with each other and kissing in the music video, which if you haven't seen the music video, is fantastic. It's just like, it's a great little story between Hayley and Kehlani, but they're playing that in the background. And then of course, Sasha Velour from RuPaul's Drag Race shows up. And I was just like gagging because Jacqueline brought Sasha. And this is just, it was a great fuck you to Patrick, who was like, do you even know about Drag Race? In their
So Patrick was like mansplaining Drag Race basically to Jacqueline. Mm-hmm. And Jacqueline was like, I'm familiar with RuPaul's Drag Race, which I don't know if you saw on Twitter. Mallory Harden was like tweeting that quote with like a picture of her and RuPaul together.
Oh my God, what?
And then someone else tweeted like a picture of her on one of the RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars red carpets. Cause she's like gone to the, like she's definitely, even in real life, the actress is familiar with RuPaul's Drag Race. And so I just love that like that slight look in her face when she's like, yeah, I'm familiar with RuPaul's Drag Race. And then Kat's like disappointed that Patrick couldn't get Sasha Velour. And then Jacqueline fucking walks in with her on her arm.
Snap. Snap, snap.
Looking stunning, I may add, both of them.
Oh my God, my jaw dropped and I have in my notes cleavage, 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 cleavage in all caps. Because Jacqueline comes in with this like lacy red deep cut top. Oh my God. And like, I had to replay that a few times just to make sure we were getting what I thought we got.
even Patrick wasn't sure. So just to back up a little bit, Patrick is having a conversation with Jane. So they were talking about prom and he said, well, I didn't have any boyfriend or girlfriend in high school. So I was like, is Patrick bi?
He might be bi.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm getting like a little hints of queerness from him in other aspects, but
he mentioned that Scarlett helped him come to terms with his gender and sexuality.
Right, 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 right.
So I assume he's queer.
I think he's bi. Yeah. And then he says, when Sasha comes in, he goes, okay, I'm rolling, so I may have conjured this. And I'm like, Patrick just told his direct report that he's on ecstasy at a party. Like, is this just normal for New York? Is that like what
Wait,
people are like?
Is that what he said?
I mean, that's what rolling means. Like,
what? Is
ecstasy
that what that means?
MDMA, yeah, yeah.
Oh
so,
my God, what?
Yeah.
Okay, I did not know this.
At least in the slang that I am familiar with in Michigan. I don't know if rolling is slang for another drug or a non-drug thing in the state of New York, but as far as I know, that's what that means.
Whoa, so, did not pick up on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Jacqueline walks in looking fine, and she's got her cleavage on display. And I was so thoroughly enjoying that. Oh my God. And Patrick concedes that, like, oh, I underestimated you, Jacqueline. And I'm like, yes, you did. You definitely did, you fucking moron. This is fucking Jacqueline. Like, what did you expect? Jacqueline of Scarlet.
Yeah. And he even says he feels stupid. I mean, like, Jacqueline pulls this absolute power move and Patrick like recognizes and respects it. He's like, and Jacqueline didn't even like sabotage him. She told Sasha about the story that Patrick wanted to do and like set him up for the opportunity to get the interview. And I'm just like, you know, that is a fucking classy broad. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
That's how you do it. That's how you do a power move properly.
Yes.
Like no pettiness. Just like, oh yeah, I'm familiar with RuPaul's Drag Race. Bring in one of the most beloved season winners on your arm to a party and then go, oh yeah, she'll do your story for you.
Yes.
I mean, it's just nuts.
Yeah, because like earlier in the episode, Patrick was worried about the fact that both he and Jacqueline were trying to get Cardi B for the magazine. Or like he was trying to get Cardi B for the column. And
digital.
For digital. And Jacqueline was trying to get her for a feature. He didn't want digital to overlap with magazine because he felt like magazine is for older and like out of touch. Whereas like digital is more on trend.
He didn't want them to be like clamoring for the same talent.
Yes. And then Jacqueline like showed him up. It was great. Well, I do worry that we're getting a lot of information about him as a character. And I'm still not sold on him. Like I would just prefer for Jacqueline to get a better storyline. That's what I would prefer.
Yeah. And I'm always wary about like the mentor mentee relationship when it's like a male mentor to like young women.
Yeah.
I mean, Jacqueline is like giving them career and life mentoring like was before. Right.
Yeah.
And I feel like, okay, career mentoring, you can get that from like, it's nice for women in certain fields, especially to get it from another woman, but I think it's acceptable to get it from a man if he's like a good mentor. Mm-hmm. But I feel like life mentoring really should not come from someone who is like as different as Patrick. Like his life experiences are just so like not what Jane or Sutton or Kat like need.
Mm-hmm. I was actually pretty upset when he pushed Jane to write the story with Pinstripe about freezing her eggs, because that's a very gendered experience. Like she is having an experience like that is about her reproductive system. You're like forcing her to make it more public than she wants it to be. She's already writing the story. Like why not respect someone's boundaries?
Yeah. I had a lot of feelings about her storyline. I was like, you know, Kristen and I were actually talking about it when, right towards the end of the episode, because I was like, you know, on one hand, I feel like if you have a partner and like you're all in on this relationship and you love them, I'm not really sure why you would be deliberately hiding this from them. But I get that she had like a bad experience with Ben, but I also feel like that's because he was a doctor and he was starting to treat her more like a patient than a girlfriend, whatever. On the other hand, she's been like super snobby and like attitude heavy with Patrick. And, you know, at some level, it's like, it doesn't matter if you don't like your boss, like, you need to be a professional and like, you can't just talk to them with like that kind of like dripping with attitude, you know, like everything she says to him and like the eye rolls and everything. I'm like, Jane, like you're at a job, like you're at a professional job and you need to act like a professional. Like you talk shit about your boss behind your back, like everybody else. And then to his face, you like, you know, behave politely. And so I feel like Patrick sort of almost did that out of pettiness just to like sort of show his authority and be like, look, I am still your boss, which I don't think was nice, but like it's like I understand why he did it.
And then
at the very end, sorry, my rant isn't over, I had a lot of feelings about this. Fucking Pinstripe shows up at her house at the time that he knows that she takes the injections, even though she told him she doesn't want him to be a part of it. And now this is supposed to be taken as like this sweet romantic thing, and I really hate how this is normalized in the media as like, oh, I tried to push you away but you knew that I actually wanted it. This is why people don't understand consent, even though it's like the easiest fucking concept. Because he should not have just shown up at her house. That's like weird. It's very invasive. Like he should have let her cool off and then went and talked to her about it later.
She said no, and he was like, oh, I'll wait and then try again. And I'm like, no. Like she already said she didn't want you to be a part of this, so don't. I mean, I feel like Patrick is getting a lot of screen time, and I don't know what that means. But I was worried that that would be at the expense of Oliver. I was worried that Oliver wasn't going to get a real storyline, and I hope this turns into a like a better storyline over the course of the season. Because like we already have a male mentor on the show, and it's Oliver.
Queer black male mentor.
Exactly, exactly.
Oh, you mean queer like Patrick. Yeah. No, I get what you mean. But yeah, I feel like he has even more to offer.
Exactly. Oliver has so much to offer. And so like early in the episode, something is wrong with Oliver. He's ignoring his duties. He's like leaving all the time. And Oliver's just like, I'm going out. And he's not explaining why. And during the queer prom, that's when Sutton realizes, oh, I have to go deal with this. I have to get Oliver's approval. And she shows up at Oliver's house. When she gets there, she sees a young girl and an older woman who didn't look like she was related to the child. Oliver's like, you're probably wondering who that was. And we find out that Oliver's ex is a heroin addict. They co-parented and raised this girl, Carly. And because of Jasper's condition, I assume he's like no longer able to like, he's no longer suitable as a parent, Oliver is applying to be her legal guardian so that she can stay out of the foster system. And that's what he's been going to court for. So, wow, that's a lot of backstory in just one or two scenes. Finding out about Oliver's personal life and that he's dealt personally with like living with and being in a relationship with someone who's an addict. And then the fact that he's trying to become a parent. So I think that's beautiful. And I'm glad that he gets to have this storyline. I just hope they explore it more.
Yeah, me too. I mean, if he does get custody, you know, kind of showing him as like a single gay dad. I mean, that's not really like the typical family that we see being portrayed these days. So that would be a really good opportunity. Back on the cat side of things, she sees Councilman Reynolds at this queer prom and sort of calls him out for not really caring. And he says, you know, what you guys call gentrification, I call neighborhood improvement. In true politician fashion, he stays very, like, nice and polite face-to-face, but, like, he's basically like, I don't fucking care.
Yeah. Well, so, like, the context for this is that when he showed up, I was like, is this guy going to try and take credit for this event? That's what I was worried about at first. But what happens is that Kat looks at how much they fundraise, and it's, like, less than half of what they need. $42,000 is a lot. It's just not enough. And so she's like, okay, well, we've raised like 20 something thousand. And so that's when she goes to the city council and says like, hey, can we make this be a partial payment? And then like work out the details later about how to like, how to get the rest of the money. And she's trying to negotiate with him and be like, hey, you say you care about this community. You showed up to this event. look at what we've been able to do. I mean, she did an incredible amount of work and raised a lot of money. I'm thinking about this as someone who has organized queer events and has organized fundraisers. To raise more than $20,000 in a single night is like,
it's nuts.
Your first time organizing an event for the queer community is unbelievable.
Right.
I mean, it's just, maybe it's because it's a TV show, but it's just like,
but you know, like, and she had the resources of like Scarlett's Twitter and stuff like that. And like, oh, sorry. I was just going to say that the vagina thermometer was a cool idea. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
And if you ever do any queer fundraising events in the future, I highly recommend you use that.
Oh my goodness. Well, I mean, I guess like, For trans people and non-binary people, like too much emphasis on like sexual organs can make some people feel uncomfortable. Mm,
that's true. That's
yeah.
true.
Yeah. But so like she goes to the city councilman, tries to negotiate, and then she says, you know, when he says gentrification is neighborhood improvement, then she's like, you know, when it comes to the actual people in your community, you don't really care. And I love that Kat just tells him off.
Yeah.
Because the guy deserved it. He says he cares, but he doesn't back that up with any meaningful action. What the hell? Showing up at this event? Showing up at this event so there are photos of you at this event. You want
right,
people
right.
to think you support them, but you actually mm-hmm. don't.
Yeah, she's like, you'll come by for a photo op, but you don't actually do anything.
Yeah, and he says that the luxury condo will have quote-unquote open space. And I'm like, what the fuck? And I thought, was the councilman paid off? Like, did the people purchasing the condo work with the councilman or give him a donation so that he would not fight this or something?
Very possible.
I'm wondering if he actually facilitated the fines being brought up.
That's a good point.
Somebody in the city had to know that the bar owed a bunch of fines from many years ago. Someone in the city, employed by the city, had to know so that the condo developers would have the information they need to proceed with purchasing the space.
Right, right.
Anyways, right. We find out that it just wasn't enough. And I think that's how I knew that this show was written by queers.
Yeah, because it's not like neatly tied up in a little bow. Oh, the lesbian bar gets to stay, yeah. You know.
This storyline
was
written by
money.
Queers who have lost queer bars. We don't get the resolution that we usually do with a storyline like this, where you throw a big fundraiser and then you hit your mm-hmm. goal and then it's great. No. At the end of the episode, we get Kat in front of her laptop realizing that she couldn't achieve what she wanted to and save the bar. But she looks up and sees that Lawrence Reynolds, the city councilman, is up for re-election as an incumbent and is being challenged by a black woman, it looks like.
Yes, Linda Zephyr. Very cool name.
I brought up the fact that he's black because sometimes with gentrification, and we saw this in Vida as well, it's people of color who enable it to take place because they want a neighborhood to quote-unquote mm-hmm. improve. They're okay with displacement.
Right.
Because they want to climb up, you know? And I think power-hungry people of color are just as culpable and just as oppressive
of course,
as white
yeah.
people who do this shit. Like, white people displacing and, like, people of color, you can displace your own. You can displace your own people. Well, he's not queer, but you can displace people of color and be a person of color.
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at, like, who gentrification targets, it targets lower-income people, and lower-income people do tend to also be people of color, but it is primarily lower-income. So that's I feel like that's why it makes sense that sometimes people of color can be the instigators of gentrification mm-hmm. and the enablers, mm-hmm. because if you're higher-income, it doesn't really matter what
yeah.
race you are. Like, gentrification is good yeah. for you. I felt like it made sense, too.
Yeah. I mean, it was heartbreaking, but we both felt it, I think. And I think that's what made this mm-hmm. episode storyline work for me, because it felt grounded and because Kat was showing, like, a real commitment to the community, even though she doesn't have that many queer friends. She's like, you know what? I'm going to organize. I'm going to look into this. I'm going to think about policies. And I'm going to think about this upcoming election and making sure this guy doesn't get reelected. So mm-hmm, I thought mm-hmm. that was a great way to, like, maintain her sense of queerness without throwing her into a new ship.
Yeah, absolutely. So in the clip for next week's episode, we see very briefly that it looks like Kat sort of joins the campaign.
She definitely dives into it in next week's episode.
Yeah, I'm excited for this because it looks like it's a good networking opportunity. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, you know, I'm hoping that, like, her sort of call to action is, like, you know, I mean, it'll be largely for, like, the community as a whole. But, I mean, her reason for going into this is to save this queer bar and, like, for the queer community. So it's kind of nice because we've talked before about how it's unfortunate that, like, really the only place you can like meet queer people or make queer friends is like mm-hmm. in queer bars or clubs. So it's like creating a new space for her to like network and find other queer people, like-minded queers. And so I'm hoping that she can, you know, find friends, you know, maybe they'll throw her a love interest. I don't know. I think it's a little too soon, but honestly, I wouldn't be super upset with that. I would just be like a little
disappointed. Oh my God, Amira, I have chills just now from you saying all that because I'm like, holy shit, this is also what we asked for. A way for her to interact with queers. Yeah, that's not nightlife and that could be platonic. Or these could be like really meaningful connections that she makes with people. And when I think about like the queers that I've organized with, those bonds last. You see each mm-hmm, other through mm-hmm. the fire. You know, you've taken risks with each other. When you bond with people and you're organizing with fellow queers, it is like, it is magic. I am so excited for her. I'm so excited for all the people she's going to meet.
I know. This is great. And, you know, just from like the queer prom scene, I feel like they do a good job of having like background queers, like good representation. Because it seemed like they had like some trans, non-binary people, not like a ton of people of color, but TBH, that's a little like too honest in terms of like who you actually see at these kinds of things.
If you're going to invite rich people, the rich people are not necessarily going to be queer people of color, but okay.
Right, right, right. But yeah, so I'm hoping that, you know, we can keep seeing that diversity. I hope that one of the main characters is like not just like a cis white queer.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. You realize that like the only thing hotter than like a love interest who's like a queer woman of color, Muslim lesbian artist is if she dates a queer woman of color organizer. Like think of that. I'm just like, obviously I still love Adina. I care about them. I still ship Kadena, assuming that both of them grow as people. But I'm just like, what mm-hmm. if this is electric? Oh my God.
Yeah, their interests would align a lot more. Like when you think about like what Kat does for a living and what she enjoys doing.
Oh my God. They would be like the ultimate power couple because between Kat's mm-hmm. access to like social media, future girlfriend, please, 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 pretty please, who is an organizer, the two of them could really do shit together and like fuck shit up. I'm like so excited.
Whew. I know. Oh my God. This is great. The show is kicking off season 3 fantastically so far.
Mm-hmm. Minus the hetero nonsense.
We don't talk about, you know, we don't care about that. We talk about it in that we rant about it, but yeah, we don't really.
But like the other thing I appreciate is that like Kat is also like a very privileged black person because she grew up with money. She mm-hmm, has mm-hmm. access to resources and I love that she's using that, you know? And I feel like if you're a queer person of color and you rise to a position like head of social media at Scarlett, you know, the first black queer woman to do that, that yeah, you should be using your platform to help other people who have your identities. Yeah. And so like obviously this councilman is not looking out for poor black folks or poor people of color, as well as not even looking out for lesbians and the queer community. I really like this development and her storyline is just like already way more interesting than either Jane or Sutton's.
Oh, for sure.
That's
for
just
sure.
bland. So excited for Kat and like all the hot queers she's gonna meet from campaigning.
Mm-hmm. Oh, me too. Oh my God, me too.
I'm crossing my fingers and toes.
Oh, it's going to be great. Yeah, so join us next week when we go over the next episode. Hopefully it will be as good. I'm really getting mm-hmm. my hopes up given that preview. Tweet at us at QWOCship with any of your feelings, mm-hmm. questions, concerns, comments, anything.
I mean, we're starting to see Baby Die Cat, who got up to the megaphone for the first time in the premiere. And then episode 2, we get to see Baby Dyke organizing her first queer event. And next week, we're going to experience Baby Dyke organizing around a campaign. It's going to be great.
Oh, I can't wait.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.